Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime.
Hello.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm good, how are you?
Good.
What are you doing? Not too much, sitting with Olive.
I'm sitting with little O.
Yeah.
Has she been a good girl?
Yeah, she is. So cute. She got a haircut, so she looks really cute at the moment.
Oh, I love that.
What have you been up to?
Nothing much really. I feel like I've had a really busy week and weekend. I'm just running around like a mad woman. I feel like that's normal for me. But yeah, I just got back from my yaya's house, helping her sweep leaves. Sort of stuff I'm doing.
Love that.
Yeah, what are you doing?
No, not much really. It's been pretty quiet, but yeah, I don't know. I don't really have much news. I've been so busy this week that I haven't really done anything exciting, yeah. I suppose you could say.
We have massive freaking crime news here in Australia. They're lucky. What the actual heck?
Oh my God. There's actually been so much stuff that I've just seen. Obviously, we'll talk about the two things we're going to talk about shortly. But, like, I saw an article this morning that said, like, some guy had, like, tried to climb into, you know, those, like, charity clothes bins.
Yeah.
And he fell into the bin, broke his neck and died, and he was just found in there. They found a body in there.
What? Where? In Melbourne?
In New South Wales somewhere.
What?
Like, there's just something so much crime news in Australia this week.
And specifically New South Wales.
Yeah.
Did you see that Taekwondo guy? Did you see this?
Yeah, that rings a bell as well.
I don't even know the whole story, right? But I'm pretty sure he killed, I don't know if it was his lover or something, but he killed like a lady and a 7-year-old son
in his
little Taekwondo studio. And then this guy drove her car back to the house she shared with her husband and stabbed the husband to death.
Oh my God.
Do you know what else? It gets crazy. Then he went to the hospital and said that he'd been attacked in like a car park because he had all these knife wounds on him.
My God.
And so then
I actually saw as well some woman got set on fire.
Really?
I don't know where. I think it may have been Victoria. Yeah, there was like a fight in the street and someone set her on fire. Like there's just been so many little things happen.
And it puts me on edge.
Yeah, it's
weird. This stuff does not usually happen. Like, there's not this much crime stuff happening in Australia, you know?
No, and obviously there's been movements in Samantha Murphy this week. The news is reporting that they're looking for a body and that the husband is assisting police. I don't think he's formally been named a person of interest, has he?
So from my understanding, everyone is a person of interest. This is in the article I read, but he's not a suspect. So they're
my mum's just going off.
They're looking into all aspects of her life. But can I tell you, right? Because, I mean, as I said to you, like, I just don't know. I don't know how I feel about the whole thing. I don't have, like, one solid thing. I'm like, yes, it's definitely this. Like, I'm not married to one theory, right? But I wonder, like, what was he doing at that time? Because the more I think about it, the more I think if he was just at home with his kids, wouldn't they have said that?
Yeah.
Look, I know there's no footage of him leaving the house, right? I understand that. But how about if he was at work earlier that morning or he worked like Sundays or something?
Yeah.
Remember they ran their own business.
My mum, like I've mentioned the other week, my mum's just going off and she's just like, you know, so wrapped that she thinks the husband, like they're implying that it's the husband. But then I thought I read somewhere that, you know, obviously their house had cameras and originally we thought that there was CCTV of her leaving for her run, but reportedly that's not true. Like there wasn't footage of her leaving.
No, there's the footage of her that morning, like just before her run in what she was wearing, throwing out dog poo. So there is, you know that footage that you see like a photo of her? She's in like a running outfit and it looks like she's walking towards like, she's got like a little poo bag with her. That is footage from just before she went for her run. Well, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, I'll just read some of the things that my mum has said because like I mentioned, she's like, I guess what everyone is talking about is what my mom talks about. So, like, they obviously did a police conference the other day when they announced that they were looking for a body. My mom said they're basically implying the husband is responsible. And they also said that they can't comment on bikie links to the case. The police also said that they are looking at the finance side of the husband's business.
Mm-hmm.
And my mum also said that when the police, the conference, press conference finished, obviously the husband was there, mum said that he had a smirk on his face. You know, my mum would just look at anything.
Like, you know what? He has been seen, and I've seen some footage of him sort of smiling. And even this week in the Herald Sun, there was like a sort of write-up, obviously, of the investigation. And do you know what they did? They put a cutout of him smiling and walking, like, in the middle of the page. Like, I feel like the media are sort of feeding. I know it sounds horrible, yes, and they probably should not be doing this, but I feel like they're sort of pushing that this happened.
Yes, and I think people like my mum are, like, prime examples of people that take what the media says as Bible gospel, or whatever.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, gospel, that's it, yeah. Yeah, so we'll see what happens with that. Still, obviously. So
can I just tell you, I just feel like it's weird that on both accounts that they haven't said, like, obviously they've got to look into him, but could he have been the one to actually do, like, what is his alibi? Like, don't you think they'd be like, oh, he was working that morning, or, like, he was at the home with the kids that morning? Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, something's weird, though, that's for sure.
And do you know what? I read – it was actually this morning, it was just a few hours ago, that volunteers did find some items in thick rubble, scrubble or whatever you call it, like in the bush, but they don't know if it belongs to Samantha. But some items were just found. So, I mean, that's interesting. The thing – sorry, last thing on this as well is that obviously they've started searching a specific area because they got her phone data this week. How the heck did it take them 2 weeks to get this data? Like, what the heck?
I feel like it's come up in another case that we've done before about how,
obviously, oh, CEO missing. Yeah,
they have to have, like, certain amounts of evidence, and there's all these legalities about phone companies releasing stuff.
Yeah, because I think they had hacked his, from memory, his family and friends had hacked his, like his setting, like hacked his phone pretty much to see his settings. And remember, it showed you, like, the exact route he took and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But that wasn't because of police. That was literally because they had hacked through his phone. So,
but they have to have that for her. They have to. If she had an Apple Watch on and a phone with her, they have to be able to have that amount of data.
And the thing that gets me is, let's just say it is the husband, there would be so much evidence, like, in text messages and things like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, don't you think there'd be evidence? And, like, his books of, like, let's say, of that, what it was, not a rubble yard, like a car yard and all that sort of stuff, there'd be so much evidence leading towards him. I just feel like it's so stupid. And how, and if it was him, how have they not sort of wrapped it up by now, you know? Like, I know we're just about to talk about this, but, like, what else happened in Sydney this week? Like, how quick was that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's get into that. So, it was, like, late this week, but, and it started out, like, the most odd news article of all time. It was, like, this ex-Channel 10 presenter and his boyfriend or husband, I'm not sure if they were married or not.
His boyfriend. They just boyfriend. Started dating, there was, I think, start of the year.
Yeah. Lots of blood found in their home, but, and they were both missing, and then, like, that's all we knew for a while. We're like, where the hell could these people be? And then,
wait a sec, can I just say one thing? Do you know how they got to the home? It wasn't, they weren't reported missing or anything. Apparently, like, a groundskeeper from somewhere, I don't know if it was, what is a grounds, is that a golf place? I'm guessing maybe it's a golf course, something. There was, like, a big, like, industrial bin, right? And he looked in it and found all these bloody items in, like, all bloody clothes and stuff. And in that bin was a bank card that belonged to either. So the ex Channel 10 presenter's name was Jesse and his partner's name was Luke, right? It was either Jesse or Luke this card belonged to, and they're like, wow, this is really bloody, like, and there's a bank card in here. So then they went to Jesse's house and then they found the crime scene. That's like, this literally started out like a movie, and that's all they had to go off.
Yeah, so that's all we'd known about. And then I think it was like the following day or 2 days after, someone was arrested and it was a policeman.
Yes.
Like, what the heck?
And sorry, I've got so much to say about this because I did get a bit into this case, right? One, so they release like footage of like a white van and they're like, we think this white van has something to do with whatever happened to Jesse and Luke, right? Like, keep an eye out for this white van or whatever. And then other people coming out and saying that Jesse had like a stalker ex-boyfriend who was a policeman. Right, so this is all rumors, like, swirling. So you're like, surely not. Like, this is way too wild, right? Then you find out that the guy handed himself into police. This guy named Bo, which is the policeman, and it gets freaky. Like, it's just this. This is what I mean, where you could not make this stuff up. This guy was like an ex. Did you see celebrity blogger? I think I messaged you this week.
Yeah. Or like celebrity stalker, I saw him listed as.
Yes. And he had like all these photos with all these celebrities, including Kourtney Kardashian and Travis from last week. He was hanging out outside where they were staying and he had photos with them from last week.
I wonder what they're thinking. Like, I wonder if they've heard about it while they're here.
And I didn't I read an article about him. He just seems like, I don't know if like maybe attention seeker is not the right word, but apparently the way he came out, right, was like that came out that he was gay. He said he threw some note onto Lady Gaga's stage and she read it out to everyone. And then she took him like backstage with her or something. It's something along the, so he's got all these weird, like, he seems like he's a little bit obsessed with celebrities, right? Yeah, and the fact that Jesse was a presenter on Channel 10. I mean, I'm not saying that he's like a big celebrity, but to him, and then he was dating him, he was probably like, wow. Like, you know what I mean? Like a sort of,
yeah,
like, not made it, but like, you know, he's my dream guy. And then obviously things didn't work out and he just couldn't get over it. And sorry, another thing as well. Sorry, like I've got so much to say. Apparently he was on shift that night. Like he was working as a police officer. And they think that he killed them. They don't even know what time. It was like, let's just say in between like 9:30 a.m. and, well, I don't know, 10:30 p.m. on Monday. Could be making up those times because it's off the top of my head. But he killed them with his police weapon.
Right? Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And he handed the gun back in at the end of his shift and then called in sick 2 days.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's wild.
Isn't it crazy? And there was he had left like shell casing at the scene, and obviously it's from like a police issued gun. Like, how dumb, this guy's a policeman and how dumb is this? Is this not the dumbest thing ever?
Yeah. There's been lots of talk about like how was he let into the police force, and you know, wouldn't like all of the mental tests and stuff they had to have done come up when he applied and all this. But like, he wasn't a police officer for that long, if I'm remembering.
I think it was like 2019, so just a few years.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, like, you think COVID, like, they probably wanted whoever they could get, you know, to enroll or whatever.
My mum was telling me that she knows someone who's been trying to get into the police force, and that's one of the things that she's struggled with is this like psychology test or whatever they do on you.
Really?
So they must actually test for this stuff, for sure.
Yeah, like, it'd be interesting to know what type of questions they ask, because obviously he got through.
Yeah. Anyway, so wow. We keep you updated. But at the moment, he has handed himself in. He's been charged with the murders, but he has not led police to their bodies. And I've been talking to so many people on our Insta this week. So, I mean, keep the theories coming. There's a bunch of people that have been messaging us. But, yeah, I think that he's definitely holding off on telling them where the bodies is. He's probably just using it as sort of like ammo at the moment, like whatever he can get, you know, bargaining tool.
Yeah, which is wrong.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes.
Any other crime news we should be talking about?
I feel like that, I mean, that's a lot for me. Wow.
Yeah.
And it's all like love triangles and like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But maybe we should get into this week's case if you're ready to go.
I am so ready to go.
Night of Philip Chisholm in a convenience store just minutes after police say he killed his high school teacher, Colleen Ritzer. The prosecution rests following some of the most compelling testimony of the trial so far. It was from Colleen's friend and fellow teacher, who spoke with her just moments before she was murdered. Christina Hager has the story.
Colleen Ritzer's friend and fellow math teacher wiped her eyes as she watched surveillance of Ritzer's last moments alive. Dressed as twins for a special buddy day at Danvers High, Sarah Giaquinta had peeked in on Ritzer's classroom after school. Inside, she saw the teenager now standing trial in Ritzer's murder. Philip Chisholm was only 14 then.
She said, "I don't know why he's here."
Prosecutors say he was waiting to follow her, stalk, rape, and kill her. The prosecution's final witness, the pathologist, who performed her autopsy, showing a diagram of 16 knife wounds and signs of choking. It set off a debate about whether Ritzer may have been clinging to life when she was in the recycling barrel Chisholm is seen on surveillance wheeling from the school bathroom to the woods. And just after prosecutors rested their case, the first mention of a motive.
And the common suggestion is that this was a sexually motivated homicide.
Starting tomorrow, defense attorneys plan to go back decades, focusing not only on Philip Chisholm's young life, but also his relatives to show a history of mental illness, the basis of their insanity defense. At Salem Superior Court, Christina Hager, WBC News.
Okay, so today we are talking about the case of Colleen Ritzer, and I had actually had this case written down in my notes as a case to do. Like, I feel like it's been in there for like a year,
but wow.
I haven't got around to doing it. And when we were talking about what we're going to do this week, I was like talking about how I was going to do this case, and I was like super excited about it, but turns out we actually did it really early on and I'd forgotten. So this was like I had to just go through my notes to find something to do. But this is what we landed on. And I wasn't sure if you had heard about it before we've done it this week, Karina. I'm not sure.
I've only – like I haven't like obviously deep dived it, but I know Sword and Scale covered it years ago. And also I cannot remember – there's this – guy I used to watch, I don't really watch him anymore, of YouTube that covers crimes. His name's Mike and he's got like an accent. Anyway, so he's covered it as well, only because when I was looking into it, I was like, oh, this is, it sounded familiar, but I couldn't place it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was familiar, but didn't know the details.
I think it was in the news in Australia. I do remember hearing about it on the news. But yeah, so Colleen Ritzer was born May the 13th, 1989 to Thomas and Peggy Ritzer. She had a younger sister, Laura, and brother, Daniel, and the family lived and grew up in Andover, Massachusetts. Colleen went to college at Assumption College, and there she did a degree to become a high school math teacher, which she did following her graduation. She'd only been working as a teacher for a few years, but at the time of her murder, she was working as an algebra teacher at Danvers High School, which from my understanding, it's like the next town over to Andover where they lived. It was like, it's like, I'm trying to think of a good way to describe it. Like it was only like a 20-minute drive or something like that. Like it was not a huge, you know, distance away.
Wait, was that so Salem? Was it called Salem?
Yeah, Andover used to be called Salem, which is where all the witch stuff happened.
I wanted to ask you because I don't know what that witch stuff is, but I know that Sabrina the Teenage Witch had a cat Salem. Do you remember? And everything just made sense when I started researching this. I was like, that must be why her cat's name is Salem.
Yeah, Sabrina, so do you remember, did you ever read about the Salem witch trials?
Okay,
which is like,
refers to it. I have no idea. I actually do not know this at all.
So I think back in the olden days, Salem was the town, the main town that put women to trial as to whether they were witches or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That so it's so obviously since been renamed, but yeah, Salem was that was Andover.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
So Colleen loved spending time with her family and she loved her profession of being a teacher. She knew she wanted to be a teacher from a very young age and she really aspired to connect with her students. She was always trying to find unique ways to inspire them and to teach them and just become their friend. Like she really just wanted to be like a solid rock for all her students.
Yeah.
She even had a specific Twitter account that she used to interact with her students where she would like post little like maths games or they could ask her for classwork help through the Twitter and all this stuff. So like that's above and beyond normal teacher.
100%. And the little quote on her Twitter, sorry, I just thought this was so cute. It was maths teacher often too excited about the topics I'm teaching. So she just loved maths.
Yeah. Yeah. So on October the 22nd, 2013, Colleen went to work as normal that day. And I did read something that said that that day at school was like dress like your friend day or something.
And Colleen,
yeah, so Colleen had dressed as her friend Sarah, which was also a teacher at the school. So she had dressed like her for the day.
They dress the same. I think they're like wearing matching things, something matching. How cute is that?
So Colleen didn't return from work that evening and her mum and dad became worried. She lived with her parents. So her mum and dad called this friend Sarah that she had dressed up as to see where she knew where she could be. They reportedly like went to the school and had a look to see if they could find her. They couldn't find her, but her car was still in the car park. Like no sign of her, but no sign that she'd left the school type of thing.
So I think it would have been a relief seeing her car in the car park because I would have been like, maybe she's just sort of been, you know, like caught up at school or she's popped out to grab some food with a friend or something.
So Colleen's family then filed a missing persons report and when the investigation began, the last known ping from Colleen's phone was near Holton Richmond Middle School, which was like the school that was directly next to Danvers High School where she worked. So the following morning on October the 23rd, the body of Colleen Ritzer was found in a wooded area next to the school. Her body had been placed in a subjective pose, and this was that she was laying on her back with her legs bent at the knees. She had no clothing on her lower body, and her shirt was pulled up to reveal her breasts. And she had a 3 foot long, which is like 90 centimeters in metric, tree branch inserted into her vagina, and her throat was cut. So it's like horrific, a horrific way to die, right?
Oh, my, and it's so graphic, oh my goodness, yeah.
Oh. So in the same area where Colleen was found, a recycling bin was also found, and this contained bloodied gloves, bloodied clothing, and some of Colleen's personal effects. Also in the bin was a handwritten note that said, "I hate you all." So it's like very, very weird. So around about the same time that Colleen's family reported her missing, there was also a student from the school that Colleen taught at. His name was Philip Chisholm. He was also reported missing by his mum at the same time. And the police focused their attention on the student because he was obviously underage, but there was kind of alarm bells from the beginning. Like, why is a student and a teacher missing at the exact same time? Like, very, very weird.
And he's only 14. And
14,
and I read an interview that, you know, that's when they originally were missing together. It's like some student from the school there. It was like rumors, like, are they together? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, just to think that obviously that's where people's minds went, but something completely, like, horrific was happening. It was like the complete opposite, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So Philip Chisholm, like you mentioned, he was 14. He lived with his mum and his mum reported him missing when he didn't come home from school. When he was reported missing, the school sent like a group email out to all like the students and parents to say that they had a student that was missing. And then the parent of another student contacted the school after she received that email and said that that afternoon she'd actually seen Philip running away from the school. So the school obviously sent this information to the police, but that was really all they had to go off.
So at around 12:30 a.m. on October the 23rd, so this is only really hours after Philip was reported missing, he was found walking along Salem Road, and the police picked him up. He had blood on his hands, and they searched his backpack, and he had like some credit cards that belonged to Colleen in his bag. And the police asked him why he had them, and he said that he broke into her car at a gas station, which the police knew was a lie from the start because her car was in the parking lot at the school.
Yeah.
Also in his backpack, they found a box cutter as well, which is obviously would be very confronting. So he was taken into custody straight away. And it was clear from the beginning to the police that Philip knew something, was connected, you know, there was something going on here. So as they interviewed Philip, it became clear as to what happened on October the 22nd. And I'm just going to go through kind of the timeline and what exactly happened to Colleen, because it's very horrific. It's really hard to believe a 14-year-old is responsible, but I'm just going to go through it. So Danvers High School had what they called a bubble period, which was like the last period of the day between like 2:30 and 3:30 or 2 and 3. I'm not sure the time. But it's the last period of the day where students can go and get help from their teachers, or they can go to the library and study, or they can do whatever they want. But the teachers are all made to be available if students need help. So during this bubble period, Colleen was teaching a class the period before, and one of her students from that class and Philip stayed in her classroom during that bubble period for help. This was Philip and a female student. So while they were there, Colleen began asking Philip about his move from Tennessee to Massachusetts. So Philip was actually new at the school, and his parents had separated, which resulted in him moving from Tennessee to Massachusetts. As soon as Colleen asked him about this, or brought, you know, kind of brought up Tennessee, the female student in the room noted that Philip's behavior changed almost instantly when the subject of Tennessee was brought up. And Colleen also noticed that he became quite agitated, so she just immediately changed the subject. She didn't want to press him any further. Shortly after this interaction between Colleen and Philip, Colleen excuses herself to go and use the bathroom. So there is CCTV footage all around the school. I think I read somewhere that there was like 140 cameras installed in the school, right?
Which is that's a lot. It's a lot, but it's amazing that they had gone to obviously that much effort to sort of like as a deterrent, you know what I mean? Or like to keep their students safe. But from my understanding, like it wasn't this all this CCTV things. They were, it was like hooked up to like a really old computer.
So yeah, so it was like really slow.
Yes. Yeah. And there wasn't like, it's not like you could click like hallway and then watch like the hallway like of Colleen's classroom. Like you literally had to sift through. There was no like sort of organization to all this footage. So they literally had to watch everything from that day to find what they needed. But there's a lot on there. So.
That's right. Yeah. So the CCTV footage captures her walking from her classroom to the women's bathroom. Shortly after this, the footage captures Philip with his hood up on his hoodie and he has gloves on, entering the same women's bathroom. About 10 minutes after this, this is at 3:06 p.m., another female student, like kind of unrelated, walks into the bathroom and quickly exits. So the footage just shows her kind of go in and out straight away. This student has later described that she walked into the bathroom, she saw someone's butt, like bare butt, and thought that she had walked in on someone changing, so she just immediately turned around and left. What she actually had stumbled in on was Philip raping Colleen. It was reported that he had strangled and stabbed her while he was raping her, but I don't think she died immediately, from what I could tell. So
at 3:07 p.m. So obviously he had been interrupted when this student walked in, so he finished what he was doing. 3:07 p.m., the footage captures him exiting the bathroom, again with the hood over his head. It's like a blue hoodie. A few minutes later, 3:16 p.m., Philip is seen pulling a green recycling bin into the woman's bathroom that he had just come from. And then, you know, 10 minutes or so after this, the footage sees him exiting with this recycling bin. And he had a ski mask on at this point in time.
He changes his clothes so many times as well throughout this whole thing. So who brings this many clothes to school? It makes me think it's premeditated, you know?
Yeah, so when in the footage where he's got the ski mask on, I'm pretty sure his jumper had gone from blue to red. So he put a red jumper on and then put the ski mask on. So, yeah, you're right, change of clothes.
Yeah.
So what Philip was doing is he was wheeling the recycling bin out to this wooded area where Colleen was later found. And in this wooded area is where he delivered the fatal stab wounds to her neck, where he posed her, and where he placed the stick inside of her. At 4 p.m. Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say about that, because obviously there's a very bloody crime scene in the female bathrooms. And I don't know if you saw this, but I thought this was like just something, just, you know, crazy case, obviously, that the cleaner stumbled across this really bloody.
Yeah, and cleaned it up.
Yeah, because apparently they had like accents and they had contacted their manager, and I think they said there's blood all over the place, but they had thick accents, and the manager thought they said that there was blue all over the place. Like there's a misunderstanding in, do you know what I mean, what they were saying, and he told them to clean it up. So how freaking, like, the amount of evidence that was lost because of this one error is just crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And that was all while he was out in the wooded area.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So at 4 p.m., Philip returns from this wooded area. He doesn't have his shoes on and he re-enters the school. He goes back up to the women's bathroom, and then the footage sees him walk out and he leaves the school building. So that was that. He obviously had gone and gotten something, or he obviously maybe went to go and clean up and saw that it was done for him. I'm not sure, but he left at that point.
Yeah.
At 4:30 p.m., Philip is seen at the Danvers movie theater going to a movie. And then
it was Colleen's credit card as well.
Yeah, like that is so stupid.
I know. He used her card to buy his tickets.
Yeah. And it was after this movie is when Philip was reported missing, Colleen was reported missing. So it was all kind of unfolding here.
Yeah.
Philip was described as being a really quiet student. He wasn't aggressive. He wasn't a troublemaker. However, like you just mentioned earlier, you do have to wonder, because he clearly came to school that day with all of these supplies, with the box cutter, with the change of clothes, with the ski mask. Like,
and he's scrawny. How he did this? He's like a scrawny kid. He's not what you think. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Well, I mean, for a 14, actually, you know what? Maybe it is what you think.
I also saw something like his mum later came out and said something along the lines of, you know, he could have easily snapped. Like he may have been a quiet kid, but maybe he was like mentally not all there and he was on edge a lot. I'm not sure. But then I also listened to a podcast as well that said that in Tennessee, he had a girlfriend. He had lots of friends. Like, he was a really normal kid.
Soccer team. Yeah, I saw that as well.
So, like, maybe the separation of his parents and him having to move was, like, super triggering for him. But then, like,
no excuse. So many what kids, the heck?
Yeah. So many kids are in that situation and do not respond in this way.
Exactly.
So in 2017, when Philip was 17 years old, he was actually being tried for this crime as an adult, which I think is definitely the right move.
Well, he attacked someone, Lockie. He attacked someone while he was awaiting in custody. Trial. A woman. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Like,
it was really, a guard?
Like, yes.
Mm. So, yeah, he was being held in custody awaiting trial, and a female guard that worked where he was being kept, he jumped her and
tried to stab her with a pencil or something. Mm. Yeah, so that obviously didn't help his case. But
no.
Philip's lawyers argued that he wasn't mentally stable, that he regularly heard voices, which made him not criminally responsible for the murder. I think they also argued that the, you know, how he, like, put the stick and stuff inside her because she was dead, like, he shouldn't be responsible for that. Like, they were just arguing all this crazy shit, right?
Yeah. But, you know, but, oh, sorry, go for it. Sorry, I just
No, you go.
No, no, go. I'll tell you after.
So Philip was ultimately convicted of the rape and the murder, but he was acquitted of the rape with the tree branch in the wooded area.
That's what I was going to say. I think that's because they can't prove that she was alive at the time. So if, like, she was already, if she had already passed, then it's not rape. It's like something of a corpse. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like another charge. It's a different charge.
Yeah.
And because they couldn't prove that she was alive during the rapes, they had to drop those charges.
I did read something, though, that it was likely that she wasn't fully deceased when she was being wheeled out, that the stab wounds that he'd done to her in the wooded area were fatal ones. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Philip was also convicted of armed robbery because he took her credit cards and used them that afternoon. And following his trial, Philip was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 40 years. So he'd be, you know, 60 or so.
Still young.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right, but I do think I read something like he got another, he got tried for the assault on the, like the prison guard, and he got another sentence, which.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so it's, I think I read somewhere that he probably won't be released until he's like 70 or 80 now or something like that. But the possibility's there.
The fact that he was 14 is probably what scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
That he was capable of something like this, you know?
And like, you just wonder, like, whether it was the separation that triggered it or not, like, would he have, like, was this always in him to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
I think he definitely would have done it again. Well, he's proved it with the guard, honestly, so.
Yeah, exactly right. But, yeah, that's the case of Colleen Ritzer. I think they have a memorial, like, scholarship for her at the school, and her family obviously try and keep her memory alive. I think, like, 1,000 people went to her funeral, which is massive. Mm. So they're trying to keep her remembered. But, yeah, it's a real shame that that's the way she had to die. Yeah.
Sad one. I'll pop up some footage, I think, on our Insta, because it is a very eerie to think that this majority, obviously the crime's not on the footage, but everything else surrounding this, surrounding the murder, is pretty much on CCTV. So
yeah, yeah. So if you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at Caffeine Crime and Canines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can head to our website and purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimecanines.
And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.